Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. Each podcast, as I'm sure you know by now, will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some of them will look at the match day experience, while others will look at more broader themes. But every podcast aims to deliver value to anyone listening in football, or indeed any other spectator sport. So whether it's general advice you're after, or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon a regular dose of the fan experience experience will make a difference for you. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep fans engaged.
And of course, if you'd like to find out more about what we do, you can check out www.fanexperienceco.com. You can also follow us on Instagram, fanexperience.co, where you'll find lots of videos of some of the clubs we visited when doing our assessments. Of course, on Twitter. And also you can now listen to our podcasts on the major hosting sites such as Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google and others, where we recommend you listen to them at 0.5 speed because apparently we make a lot of sense slowed down. It's much more fun and obviously it allows you to enjoy a half an hour over 60 minutes, which is even more fun if that were possible. So Darren, hi, what have you been up to?
Much of the same, really.
I tried to catch you out with a question like that at some stage during the podcast.
You always managed to do it as well. But I've been doing lots of important work for the Fan Experience Company. What else would I be doing?
Well, that's it, of course. Thank you very much. That's wonderful. We're really happy tonight because we've got Stuart Fuller with us. Stuart is chairman of Lewis FC, Equality FC, as many of the people who follow us will know. And we love him and his club for the fact that they're different. I could not tell you the number of times that I've mentioned Lewis when presenting, when talking to people, whether it be relaunching the Danish Women's League or the top tier of the Norwegian Women's League, whether it's talking to clubs in Moldova and Estonia about taking a different approach to give themselves a platform for growth, or whether it's here in England. And that high-pitched noise was the producer telling me to hurry up. So without further ado, Stuart, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Yeah. Hi, Stuart.
No, hi. It's nice to have you here. So how did it all start? How did you get involved in the first place? And how did Lewis become different, for want of a better word?
They're sort of all related to each other. I was a West Ham fan. I've been through the good times, which there's been very few at West Ham, and the bad times, which there's been a lot. Now, I was a realist. We were never really going to be a good challenger at the top of the league. And I just sort of got really fed up with the when the new owners came in and some of their promises that were obviously not going to happen. And as a fan, I just didn't feel as if I had any affinity with what they were trying to do. And at the same time, I was still doing my travels throughout Europe and researching books and things like that. And one of my friends who had a similar hobby said, well, why don't you come down and watch this team called Lewis? And I was like, I have no idea who Lewis are. Don't even know where the place is. And so I went down and met him. And at the time, Lewis were in the conference.
Yeah,
the National Premier. So it was their one season, which was disastrous on and off the pitch. But it was brilliant because you could go down there and you could have a drink and you could, it was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And one of the things that I loved so much about it was that people cared. And it wasn't just about the football. It was about what was happening. It was the 90 minutes became a little bit irrelevant.
Yeah.
And then the club went through some significant issues off the pitch. And in 2010-11, that's when it went into fan ownership.
Yeah, it's interesting because as everyone will know, are you on the third volume of the Football Tourist now? Is that right?
Yes, the third volume. It's due to be published very, very soon.
Yes, well, we couldn't go without giving that a plug. But of course, there you are, travelling around, well, the world have been following you recently on Instagram, and you've been kind of doing a bit of reminiscing and posting pictures from, you know, games from all over the world in all sorts of different sports. And like everybody, you're obviously drawn to non-league because of that kind of just the fact that it is relaxing, it's informal, and a lot of the things that kind of make football at a high level frustrating, you know, are not there. But that might lead you with, in a fan-owned club, to think, well, let's just do that. Let's just make sure we've got some decent beer. Let's just make sure that we've got, I don't know, you know, we've got, you know, plenty of things going on. But you don't. But you've done things a lot differently, and a lot of that, I understand, went back to that original team of the kind of the board once the club was fan owned. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. So when the club went into fan ownership, there was a group of six guys, none of whom really knew anything about football, no background in football at all. A couple of journalists, you know, a fund manager, someone who had sold a marketing company, a couple of screenwriters, and. They decided that the club needed to be at the heart of the community, and community needed to be at the heart of the club.
Yeah.
And the decision was made then is that we'll fall to as low as we have to in order to stabilise, in order to grow our model. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing about it was that we would challenge the norm.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that someone said very early on, so I joined the board the following year.
Yeah.
One of the first things that someone said to me was that you're not going to be successful because you know nothing about football. And our point was, well, show us a success story of a club that hasn't had a sugar daddy, and then we'll tell you that that's been a success.
Yeah.
So we challenged everything, and we started doing everything differently. And that was, we started off with match posters because we felt that we had to re-engage with the local community. So we started designing match posters, which nobody was doing at the time. And we tried to make them eye-catching and different. We then looked at various promotions within the club. We looked at the food. We looked at the drink. The ground itself was still, you know, a bit of a crumbling wreck.
Yeah.
And not much has changed with the ground over the last decade. You know, we've put the beach huts in that have been a fantastic success, which, again, people thought that was a joke, and we sort of said the joke was on them when they paid for themselves after about 3 months, and that was 6 years ago. And, you know, we always try and do things differently.
And when I've been talking to Darren about Lewis, because he's not had the pleasure yet, and, you know, you also had the Amex Stadium, didn't you, that was growing. Mm. And while they were in the, it always escapes me, the Withdean, wasn't it? The Withdean,
yeah.
When they were in out there kind of... away from the rest of us. And then, of course, now they're in the Premier League with 27,000, 28,000 at a brand new stadium. So, of course, you know, the pressure is on you even more. And there's a couple of things that, and I know you brush past, and one is the posters. But actually the posters were based on kind of films, weren't they, on album covers, iconic images with just one or two, you know, small... I mean, the one that brings to mind is... Springs to mind is the Metropolitan Police one where you use the Banksy,
the
two Met Police embracing. And you know, that's been the kind of thing. So that kind of transcends the usual, you know, I'll buy a couple of things from the fan shop. And you've got those people around Europe picking up on that and thinking, I'll buy some of that, you know. And then then you've also talked about some other elements of the match day. But it really is very, very different. You know, it's hugely different.
You say, Mark, that I haven't had the pleasure, but... Interestingly, I feel like I have, because I must have used the picture of the beach huts in slides all over Europe. So I feel like I've been to the ground, because I can just picture the beach huts as if I was standing next to one now.
And they're not just beach huts either. Each one is done out differently. I think when I was there, and I was there on a non-match day, I think one was done out like a kind of, you know, Georgian hotel, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's one that's completely football themed. So we got a local artist to do all his football things, which has got, it's got a Sabutio table in. We've got one that is done out as a tea room inside. So again, even those things, you will try and do little things differently. Our media centre is a shed. That's painted very nicely on a platform next to the pitch. And yeah, everything we try and do, we just want to be a bit different.
Yeah, and of course, the benefit of all of this is that you also have the you have 4G field, don't you?
Yeah. So a few years ago, through a we did a share issue, a community share issue, and we built a 4G facility adjacent on the adjacent land to where we are, which is again, it's a community asset. It's used all by all sorts. It's used by our men's vets, our women's vets, our under 13s, our under 14s. It's the home pitch for our ladies foundation squad and reserve teams. So yeah, it's used constantly.
Yeah, and it's kind of that's where you kind of depart slightly, you know, where most football clubs, you know, we're talking at the moment about that thing that you never thought would happen happening, where something could put a lot of non-league clubs, if not the majority, out of business. And you know, a lot of them, they have something which is magical. You know, they're friendly, they're warm, kids can run around, you can have a nice beer, you can sit in comfort, you can park for free. And the general theme that we tend to find is that the clubs hide their lights under a bushel. They don't promote their assets. And so I think that's a little bit different with yourselves. You genuinely have gone out and told people about you, not locally, but to the point that you're, you know, one of the top ground hopping visiting places. And of course, having the railway station within a few yards of your clubhouse, you know, helps. But you do, I'm always very conscious of three things: about the club identity, community engagement, but then not losing it in the fan experience as well, and actually offering something together then. So you can see that the result of that means that you have a much higher profile in the vicinity, and people are not just coming to you for the football. So you get what Dan from Bohemians called high quality fans. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that. Is that what you've experienced?
Yeah, and it's interesting. We won the sort of best away day award in the Isthmian leagues for the last few years. We won the Supporters Direct, or whatever it is now, the Football Supporters Association best away day, step three and below, last year.
Yeah.
I think it was the Huffington Post a few years ago rented us as one of the top 10 football destinations in the world.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which isn't bad, because, you know, I wouldn't say we go out of our way to, you know, to really make a massive effort. All we do is we just challenge and question things. Yeah. We've now got a guy who runs our facilities. So he's the director, Steve Keegan. He's run and set up and run a number of craft breweries. So he's completely revolutionised the bar and the Rookie Inn. And we're looking at ways in which we can use that, especially, you know, in COVID times. So potentially like Munich-style beer garden on the pitch and things like that, that could be coming in the next couple of weeks. Funny story this. So last summer, so he did all the work and he went round. We had Harvey's and we had two other local breweries. Gunn was one. I think Franklin was the other. And he put all their beers on tap and it was brilliant. And everyone loved it, apart from the players. Right. Why haven't we got any Budweiser? What's happened to the Fosters? So literally we have to buy in crates of Budweiser and Fosters just for the players.
There's always someone want to spoil it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Stuart, just one thing that's really, I just wanted to go back to was the fans. Because obviously, you know, the club's 100% fan owned anyway, so fans are making the decisions. But I was just wondering about the other fans, if you like, the fans who just, you know, go week in, week out to watch games, how they find it. Because when we spoke to Daniel at Bohemians, one of the things that really struck us was that he said he thought that winning on, you know, the actual winning the match was for a fan in the fans' list of priorities, only accounted for about 5%. I just wonder what you thought of that in terms of your experience.
It's funny because, you know, in 10 years that I've been involved in the club, we've only had three seasons where we finished above 11th. One of those, we came second.
Yeah.
So to us, winning, it's never been about winning. To us, it's been about the players putting in a decent performance. And even when we went down, the last time we went down, which was 5 seasons ago, the support from the fans, especially away from home, even though we knew we were going down, was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Because what they want to see is they want to see players that care. They want to see players that really care for playing for Lewis. And if those players are 16, 17 years old that are coming up through our youth teams and things like that, the crowd love that. Yeah, of course we want to win. But this sort of goes back to this whole, the reason why I'm a West Ham fan. It was about bringing those youngsters through, and it was about the performance in some instances rather than the result. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of fixation in football, especially non-league football these days, about the result. And there's silly money being thrown around chasing the dream. And, you know, I feel sorry for certain clubs this year who, you know, the league is null and void, but there's a lot of money that's gone into that investment. And you just think, is it worth it?
Yeah.
You know, because if we want to go up, we could throw money at it. Without a doubt, we could throw money. We know roughly how much we'd have to throw at it to go up.
Yeah.
But then next season, we're going to be in the National League South.
Yeah.
We'd have to find probably £4,000-£5,000 a week more just to compete. And it's like, why? You know, that's mad. And yeah, we want to play at the highest level, and of course we do. We also have to be realistic.
You said, Stuart, and I thought it was really interesting, and I actually scribbled it down because it really, really struck with me, about the 90 minutes being, I think you used the word irrelevant. I totally understand the context you mean that in. So how did the fans react to that? Do you think they think it's irrelevant, or do you think they sort of buy into the much bigger picture?
I think they buy into the bigger picture. I wouldn't say that necessarily it's irrelevant. I think that, you know, last season we had a poor season. You know, we finished the season in 16th. We were on the cusp of the bottom three. And in every game apart from one, when the players came off, they were applauded by the crowd for the effort. We might have lost, but they were applauded by the crowd. And there was just one game where it turned, and that was we lost 6-1 at home to a team where they had 6 shots on goal, we had 10, and they scored 6 and we scored 1. Mm-hmm. But it was, there was no doubt that was a tipping point in the fortunes of the club, because the crowd did turn around and they weren't happy, and you can understand why.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a balance. I think people want to see us competing, and I think one of the issues is that you know when you're completely outclassed, you know when you're the worst team in the league, and we've never ever been the worst team in the league in the last decade.
One thing that you have got is a strategy, don't you? Because remember, you're sharing it.
Yeah.
You have a very clear plan for what it is that you're doing, and that, you know, clearly transcends the football. You know, it is about community engagement, and you're sticking to that plan. And a couple of things that it's brought you has been the global coverage of the decision to provide the same budget for both your men's and your women's team.
Yeah.
You know, for a club your size to be in the press in Australia, North America, South America, you know, all at the same time is quite remarkable.
Mm.
You've also, I guess, more of an indirect link, led to a play that's done the rounds as well, because wasn't Patrick Marber part of your original?
Yes, correct. Yes, so the Red Lion.
Yes,
that was his play. Yeah,
yeah. So was he a football fan before he joined the board, or has his experience of Lewis kind of sharpened his perception of football and his ability to bring it to life in that play?
He's supported Arsenal all his life, so he's known nothing about football.
He knows nothing about football. That's it. Yeah. That's
So his story was, I mean, he lives in London with his family, and he also had a house down in Sussex, which he went to when he was writing. And one day he just happened to be in Lewis. He needed to get something. He parked in the car park next to the ground, didn't even realise there was a football ground there. His son said, should we sneak in, you know, go and have a game of football? So they did. on the pitch, and he sort of fell in love with it from there. Yeah, and he's Red Lion is a story, for those who don't know, it's a story about a non-league football club and about a manager who's a little bit shady and a guy who's the club legend, who does every job under the sun, and this young, hopeful player that the club get in, and about the trials and tribulations about them.
But doesn't that kind of almost in some way just summarise what it is that you're trying to do? You know, the challenge between sitting back and let football be what it usually is, which is, you know, good money after bad, you know, just for a great cup draw, maybe 1 year every 25, but actually doing something which is not just meaningful, but it is sustainable. It is capable of making a difference while still getting a fantastic cup draw, you know, 1 year 25. And so that's been fairly evident. The Equality FC thing, was that something that did it just hit somebody out of the blue, like the best ideas often do? Was it something you worked on for a while? So what was the genesis of the equal pay for the men and the women's team, or at least the equal budgets?
So one of our directors, Ed Ramsden, highly intelligent person, very involved in the global stock market. It was one of his ideas. He's had lots of these sort of brainwave ideas, and he sort of thought about it. And he challenges himself and says, what is stopping us doing this? And he pitched it to us as a board, and we thought about it. And then we put together a plan. It was around 9 months. He put in, so he stood for re-election in the October, and he put it in his election address. This is what we're going to do. And we then spent sort of 7 months working on it and trying to make sure that we could do everything and how we would plan it and everything like that. And then we launched in a very similar way to, you know, when we decided that we wanted to apply for a spot in the Women's Championship. Again, that was something that was planned for, you know, a good year in advance, and we had a lot of help from, you know, external people who were willing to give up their time to help us create a bid. We've sort of taken it from there. You know, to us, the next step for the women's side is the Super League. Mm-hmm. And we feel that, you know, we're pretty close to being able to play in the Super League. And then after that, who knows? But yeah, our aspirations certainly on the women's side are a lot higher than where the club are, well, a division higher. Yeah. On the men's side, who knows? I think there is, you know, part of the beauty of Lewis is that you can watch the football, you can have a beer. And unfortunately, because football fans are so badly behaved when they have alcohol, according to our esteemed leaders, you lose that as soon as you get into the conference or the national premier now.
Yeah. Stuart, just, I was looking on the club's website and saw all the various ownership options. Mm. And one thing that, again, sort of jumped out at me was the lifetime ownership, which I thought was a great idea, but also the gift ownership as well. So you tell me, but it sounded like a great way of introducing the fans to the club as well.
Yeah, so gift ownership has become really popular. Just the number of people buying ownerships for somebody for Christmas or, you know, for Father's Day or whatever. That's become really, really popular. And at the moment, we're actually doing a crowdfunding ourselves to replace our floodlights, which, little spot of trivia for you, were originally funded by a concert in the town by Pink Floyd in 1968.
If only we had another 30 minutes
or 4 hours
to discuss this, you really a big interest.
Yeah, so,
I won't go into the fact that my cousin's husband went to school with Sid Barrett's story here, but that's a long story. But anyway, listen, we've reached the point where I say it's
time for the roundup.
Thank you for that one, Cameron. It goes without saying, it's something that we share with everybody we speak to, especially clubs that are trying to build a strategy for growth outside of success on the pitch. You know, we're trying to get clubs to recognise that, you know, that's the one area you can't control, but you can control every single element of the type of strategy that you've heard Stuart describe this evening. So, Stuart, thanks for spending half an hour with us. It's going to be a fantastic listen for everybody out there. Let me come back to the roundup, and we just have one story for the roundup this evening. And again, it's a sign of challenging times for football, especially in non-league. But as Stu has mentioned, there's a crowdfunder also going on at Prescott Cables. We mentioned the Cables because we recently did an assessment for them as part of a kind of a deep dive assessment program pilot for the FA. And a fantastic club, again, with a huge emphasis off the pitch and a lot of focus on making sure that first-time fans get a great experience. And what they're doing with a hashtag Up the Cables is trying to raise £10,000 to help the club have a foundation really for moving forward next season. They raised 1,500 in just 2 days, and what they've said is that if they get beyond 10,000, then a significant percentage of that, I think it's 10%, will be going to local charities. So that news brings us to the end of this podcast. So I'd like to thank Stuart. Thanks for coming, Stuart. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, guys.
And Darren, as ever, for taking time to be with us. To our producer, and also to you for listening. So thanks for joining us on the Fan Experience Experience podcast, and we'll see you next time.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience Experience was recorded live. See you next time.